Today on Marvel Movie News, we'll take a look at the new international trailer for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, take a look at what Nick Fury was up to during the Civil and Infinity Wars, and celebrate the life and times, everything about Stan the Man, Stan Lee, today on Marvel Movie News.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Marvel Movie News.
You'll belong, you'll belong. I wanted to open with this today. Welcome back, Marvelites. You are all members of the Merry Marvel Marching Society.
Yeah.
Excelsior. I've never meant it more. Excelsior to you, Marvelites. I've never said it before, because I'm back! Hey, guys!
Yes.
Hey, Amy!
Hey, Zach!
For those of you who don't know me, I am the voice of Doom, formerly the voice of Doom,
yeah.
Zach Wilson. Thank you so much for joining us. We have a very big show today,
mm-hmm.
obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot to talk about. There's some news to talk about, but then we want to celebrate Stan the Man. Stan Lee. I always want to call him Stan the Man.
Stan
I don't know
man.
Why. It just sounds really good.
Yeah, it does.
The man on the soapbox. There's so many things to talk about. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Why don't you tell them who you are?
Well, hey, guys. I'm Amy Cassandra Martinez, and you all can find me on all social media at Amy Cassandra MTZ. I am also in the chat, so feel free to chime in with all your thoughts, comments, questions, anything you have with us right now.
All right, guys. And I'm Zach Wilson. I'm so excited to get started. Yeah, as I said, we are going to be talking a lot about Stan Lee. We're going to get through some news first, and then we're going to talk about what we loved about Stan, what he meant to us. And we're going to go through our favorite Stan Lee cameos.
Yes.
Countdown, like a sort of top 10, not ranked, but like top 10. And then we are going to be joined later by Christian Blatt and Zia Anderson of AfterBuzz TV's Marvel TV Weekly so that they can also share their affections for Stan Lee with us. Stick around for that. But first, let's go through today's news. Oh,
yeah.
Oh wait, before we do that, I gotta give a shout out to Aunt Manthony in the booth.
Hello, hey, how's it going, everybody? It's Aunt Manthony here, and I gotta say, Zach, welcome to the show, or welcome back to
yeah,
the show.
Thank you. Yeah,
yeah,
see, I forgot to toss to the booth, because I was usually the guy getting tossed to when I was here.
This
or
is different.
Or I'm on a cell phone just yelling about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. No one can contain the S.H.I.E.L.D. minute anymore, guys. There's a Coulson on the desk now in Lola.
Oh my gosh, I just saw that. Oh my, hi!
There's no more
so
S.H.I.E.L.D.
nice
minute, S.H.I.E.L.D. blocks. but yeah, Aunt Manthony in the booth, thank you for being there. If you tweet a message to @MarvelNewsPTN or to @ThePopcornTalk on Twitter, he will retweet it for you. We've also got Colt Badeau tweeting from the Starjammer @MarvelNewsPTN. All right. I don't know. Aunt Manthony, do you think we should get started with the show?
Yeah, I think this intro has run its course. Let's get into the thing. It's getting a little long.
Yeah, it's getting a little long. Almost as long as the runtime for Avengers 4.
But
Segue. the directors mm-hmm. of Avengers 4,
mm-hmm.
the untitled Avengers 4, have shared with us that the rough cut of the movie
mm-hmm.
is running at about 3 hours.
Yeah.
Which is which would make it the longest Marvel movie to date. I think Infinity War was 240, roughly 240.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not done. They said they're only halfway through the post process. There are 3,000 visual effects shots.
That's it?
In this.
Just 3,000?
Just 3,000. There's okay. just shots. That doesn't, that means that, like, if you think of a scene has, like, if it's, like, us talking and there's, like, a shot of Amy and a shot of me and then a wide mm-hmm. shot and, like, maybe a couple close-ups, that's, like, 4 or 5 shots.
Yeah.
3,000 shots in this movie need digital effects inserted into them in some way that teams of people around the country and the world are working on right now.
Imagine to be one of those people that's like, that's my job. I gotta go do this. This is what I get paid for.
I mean, I have friends that do that. I literally have friends that are doing this right now.
Stop it. Oh my gosh.
That's their every day.
Yeah.
We just talk about it, but they're doing it.
Wow. I want to talk to them. We should have them over. Hey.
That's really all. It's a long movie. Are you okay, Amy? Are you okay with a 3-hour movie for this one?
I'm going to be completely honest. Heck yes. Yes, because I just want more. I want a nice, happy ending, which I don't know if that's what we're going to get, but I just want more. It's kind of like one of those things where, you know, would you like to watch the extended cut or would you like to watch the theatrical cut? And it's like, the more you give me, the better, as long as it's good, which I know it will be. Duh.
Yeah, if they need 3 hours to get this one done, yeah, I'm all for it. I don't think that they would push this past any time that it needs. My only complaint when I saw Infinity War, especially the first time through, was that it felt like half a movie.
Really?
But it was a great half of a movie. That was the thing. It's the same way I put it equivalent to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1.
All right.
Where it's not that I didn't like that. I love the books. The books are always first. Yeah. But
brace yourself, Amy.
I know. That's what I'm holding on to. I'm holding on to the table.
The first movie was great, but then it stopped, and I was like, oh, that was only half a movie.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for the second half right now. And so it wasn't really it was just the nature of the story, and that's sort of the nature of Infinity War, is that there were gonna be two parts to this,
mm-hmm,
and I'm ready. I want the second part. So this is just, to me, this is a 5-hour movie, and we only got to see half of it so far.
True. And I think for our psychological health, it's a good thing that they split it up into two, because there's no freaking way that I think we would have all made it through if it was all just one movie. I know some people in the chat were like, yeah, I'm game for a 3-hour Avengers 4. Like, Mr. Antonla. I did that perfectly, didn't I? Gamer Girl even said Avengers 4 is going to be longer than Braveheart. So, you know, it depends on who you're asking, but I think it's about half and half.
It's going to be so long, it'll be on 2 VHS tapes, like Titanic.
Oh my, that's actually what I was thinking about.
Speaking of Avengers 4 and Infinity War, I want to talk about the Captain Marvel prelude. we were just debating which word it is.
Yeah, prelude.
That came out. I picked it up. It came out yesterday. These books are hit and miss for me. If you guys have ever read the prelude thing, sometimes they're just like, we took the last movie, mm-hmm, and condensed it into 25 pages, which is dull. Sometimes they give you like completely new perspectives. The Ant-Man prelude was like Hank Pym's story, like the MCU version of Man in the Anthill. And it was great. I loved that book. This is Nick Fury's perspective, Nick Fury and Maria Hill, what they were doing between Age of Ultron, Civil War, and Infinity War. This sort of back, like, view on everything, where Nick Fury is seeing his pet project, the Avengers Initiative,
mm-hmm,
sort of collapsing. Like, they were always meant to be this force that was ready for any cosmic threat. And now he's seeing it collapse around him. So the fun in this book is that, yeah, if you look up at this photo, Nick Fury he's found Cap. This is after Civil War, but before Infinity War, where there's like a thing in Syria, and he goes and he like delivers them a Quinjet.
Oh.
So like the Quinjet that they have, that this was Nick Fury's like gift to them. Like, he's like, I think you should get back with Tony. he's like a best friend who's like, I think you need to get back with your ex. Like, you guys got to work this stuff out.
It's going to be okay. You just need to talk about it. Talk things through.
Like, nope, can't. I told him he could call me if he wanted to, but he's not doing it. It's just a cool little like background story. And then it leads right up until the call. There's no Captain Marvel in this book, but it basically gets you to Nick Fury putting in that call, which I'm sure will play into however Captain Marvel wraps.
Wraps. True. I think, you know, it's nice to have these preludes, whatever you want to call them, just because, you know, it's a different part of the story. Do you see it as canon?
Yeah, these are considered, well, these are what you would call near canon.
Okay.
When I've worked on stuff that's like in these kinds of universes and they have like tiers of canon,
mm-hmm,
it would be considered near canon. So like if the movies ever need to, it's canon until the movies decide that it's not. is basically the way that it's approached. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how it happened, but if the movies ever feel the need to contradict it,
they can't.
They get contradicted.
Yeah.
It will, like, no writer is going to be like, oh, but in that comic that we did.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the trade-off there. So it is, like, an official perspective. Like, mm-hmm. this is published by Marvel. It's not fan fiction.
Right, right, right.
But it's not, like, also, it's also not written by the people that wrote the movies.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's kind of like just adding to the story that we already have.
Yeah.
And just having a little bit more meat to it.
It's like a little novel. It's like sort of like the novelizations. If you will.
I like that.
Let's move on to Once Upon a Deadpool.
Yes.
Coming this December. Because they put out a new poster for it that is ridiculous.
I love it.
I need to pull it up on my computer so I can see it better. But it's absolutely...
It is. Zoomed in a little.
Yeah. You've got Fred Savage riding on a reindeer... with like a Rudolph reindeer, because he's got a red nose. He's riding on Rudolph with Deadpool in a Santa hat. I wasn't going to be excited about this movie when I first heard about it, but the fact that they actually went in and shot new footage, I feel good. Like I know you and Coy talked about it a couple weeks ago, but how are you feeling like with all of this, like the poster and everything? How are you feeling about Deadpool? Once Upon a Deadpool.
Once Upon a Deadpool. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, we knew that there was going to be a PG-13 version. Then we got the title. The title was like, Once Upon a Deadpool. All right, yeah, okay. And then now that we have the poster, I'm like, that's cute. I really like the poster. I really do. I love how, like, it looks really real. You can see Deadpool right there.
Yep.
And it's just, it's crazy. I really like it. I think... I mean, basically what I've said before, that if this means that more people are watching Marvel properties, then I'm here for it. I do want to make sure that we still keep the Deadpool-ness Deadpool-y, if that makes sense. You know?
It's the... I know that this is clearly something Disney-influenced. For better or worse, Disney doesn't want to do R-rated... superhero movies. They've never wanted to with Marvel stuff. It's with the MCU.
Yeah.
Because it's not in the MCU. They have a very specific tone with. Like Kevin Feige is the showrunner of this giant TV show called the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and that has a consistent tone. You know more or less what you're going to get when you go into it. Each one has its own flavor, but you know what tone, like generally speaking, you're going to get. Even when it's more serious or whether it's more comedic. You know that what you have an idea of what you're getting into. And that's sort of the beauty of it, is that you have that sort of, the audience has that viewpoint. But Deadpool lives in his own world. He has his own take on everything. And I hope he stays that way. I know my only worry with this is that Disney is testing the waters for PG-13 Deadpool so that Deadpool 3 or X-Force could be PG-13. And I think that part of the fun of that character is that he can push those limits to their extremes. And maybe if this has become a trend where you can do the R-rated version, then you re-release it in PG-13, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
They're stealing another 20 of my dollars, but...
We'll give it to you guys if you really want to.
I'd rather that over losing the... more adult humor Deadpool that we've gotten, which has been so much fun and has let Ryan Reynolds really enjoy this character. Ryan Reynolds, I think, will be the key to keeping Deadpool what it is, because when they offered him this, he technically could have said no. At least he jokingly said is he said no at first, and then he was like, okay, I'll do it, but I want to kidnap Fred Savage. Mm-hmm. Let me explain. That was what he tweeted about it.
Yeah, and then also, you know, donating some of the ticket sales.
Oh, yeah, that was the other
part. To charity. So they've been wanting him to do a PG-13 version of Deadpool since, like, 2000s. For a while. And so I think he's the one that's going to be like, okay, cool, like, we did it, but let's make sure that we still keep Deadpool.
Yeah.
And I know some people in the chat were saying, you know, they did reshoot. Or they added, well, they reshot, I guess, the beginning and then the end. So the beginning and the end of the storybook stuff. So it's basically what they're going to be cutting out throughout the movie, too, which I know has people hesitant. But let's just give it a try. If you want to give it a try and give it and watch it, then let us know what you guys think once it does come out. And if you don't, that's okay. You don't have to watch it.
We'll see what it's like.
Yeah.
I'm not concerned about this one affecting Deadpool 2. I'm just worried about what it's going to be going ahead. But only time will tell on that. So there's no reason to get Worried. Back to Infinity War for a moment. This is just a quick story, but Disney, previously it was announced that they were pushing Black Panther for a number of categories for Oscars, for the Academy Awards. Like, they're starting their campaigns and everything for what they want. They're pushing several actors for that. They're pushing for Best Picture for Black Panther. But they originally only submitted Infinity War for one or two categories, obviously visual effects and things like that. But now they've announced that they're going to be pushing for a lot more. Whether they are going to put the same amount of effort into it, we'll see. But they're pushing for, this is the list of Oscar, of things that Disney is submitting Infinity War for Academy Awards. Director, adapted screenplay, film editing, cinematography, production design, costume design, makeup and hairstyling, sound mixing, sound editing, original score.
I mean, yeah.
Amy, are there any of those that stand out to you as a category you think Infinity War stand a chance in?
I would say, I mean, cinematography, production design, sound editing, sound mixing. Sound mixing, sound editing for sure, I would say. Yeah.
Sound is always a good play for something like this because it does use sound in a unique way as opposed to some other things. I don't know about, like, score. Writing is going to be a tough one for this. Not that I think it was poorly written by any means.
No.
But it's, like, Black Panther. The thing is, I think Black Panther has so much more of a shot at these because of it was, if Marvel was ever going to do a Academy Award Beatty movie, this was as close as we're going to get. A Shakespearean tale with the most one of the most diverse casts, or like with people in terms of bringing people of color that like you've seen on screens at all. So I understand why they're pushing Black Panther a lot more. I do think it has a shot at maybe editing, because it was so emotional towards the end and it affected so many people, but it's, even that's a bit of a stretch. I really wish there was an Academy Award for motion for mocap, because Josh Brolin, like, I know they won't nominate somebody for supporting actor for a mocap performance, but Josh Brolin, the way he brought Thanos to life in this, I thought, like, deserves some recognition from somewhere, whether or not it's the Oscars, who cares? But like somebody needs to give him a statue. Even if maybe it's just a giant glove, that would be nice. Just give him a glove.
Yeah, with all of the stones.
But yeah.
Of course, because he fought hard to get them.
Yeah.
Yeah, some people in the chat are saying film editing, original score, director, visual effects. Yeah, I think it's certainly this year, you know, the fact that we're pushing, but that they're pushing, you know, for these movies to be nominated, these films to be nominated, it's a good thing. And I think there is a shot for any of these two films to be nominated for any kind of category. The thing is, which ones?
You know what I'm surprised about? I just realized that this list is missing visual effects. And that could have been a mistake in what I pulled, but I pulled it straight from this article, and I don't think that they listed visual effects. That's interesting. Yeah, at least according to IGN, they were not submitted for visual effects, which I thought they would have had a good shot with Thanos alone.
Yeah,
would have carried that. But who knows? We'll see. Pushing through, because I want to make sure that we have enough time to talk about Stan Lee. Let's do some real quick Marvel TV time.
Yay!
There it is.
Marvel movie news. We're talking TV time.
Disney streaming service officially has a name.
Yeah.
Disney streaming service, aka hey, Star Wars and Marvel fans, give us your money.
Pretty much.
Is now Disney Plus.
You know, it's weird because I had heard that it was Disney Play
a while ago. That was the rumor, but it was never confirmed. It was just like this prominent rumor that a lot of people were like, well, that makes sense.
Cool. That's what it's called. Yeah, that's cool. You're already going to take our money anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm signing up. With everything from, like, The Mandalorian and whatever else they're doing with Star Wars. But then this announcement also came with the official announcement of the first Marvel series, because that's the other thing, is none of these series have been confirmed until now. Loki is officially the first Marvel series being originally produced for Disney Plus.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
I'm so hesitant.
What?
Here's the thing. I love Tom Hiddleston, okay. but unless this is a prequel story, like this is about a younger Loki, like in his most mischievous days,
yeah.
We haven't seen Avengers 4 yet. But I thought, like, after I saw Infinity War, he was the one death that we could count on being there and being and maintaining its emotional devastation.
And Gamora.
I think she's coming back, but that's a whole other... We don't have time for that discussion right now. But, like, because I see her path to coming back, but because Loki died in a way where he just was killed. It wasn't because of an Infinity Stone, like with Gamora and the Soul Stone. It wasn't because of the snap. Like, he was just killed. And I thought that was going to leave him truly dead. Mm-hmm. And death is something the Marvel Universe obviously plays fast and loose with.
Yeah.
But unless Avengers 4 does something that really makes me want to see him back, I'm not sure about a post-Infinity War Loki story. Mm-hmm. If it was young Loki, but it's not because they officially also confirmed Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah.
I could also be interested, but it's not young Loki. It's Tom Hiddleston Loki.
I mean, it could still be a younger version of Tom Hiddleston. He looks amazing.
But what I mean is young Loki, like in the comics, like where he's a teenager again. And that's like its own interesting little like twist. Maybe we'll get Loki Sorcerer Supreme. Don't do that. We're way too early for that.
I feel complete opposite from you. I am excited. Whatever the heck they're going to give us. I know some people in the chat were saying Bob Iger called it a sort of Disney play. Oh, you're talking about something else. I got you. but yeah, some people are saying that it's for sure going to be a prequel. Like that's kind of what was insinuated. I'm here for it. Whatever it is, if you have Tom Hiddleston as Loki, I'm there.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
Yeah. It's going to be 6 to 8 episodes.
Yeah.
And we'll see what it looks like. Like, I'm not saying no. Like, that's great. I love that they're going all in on a full cinematic character and a character who has been there for so long mm-hmm. as Loki. Like, I'm hoping that this leads to the Captain's America show with which is what I'm calling it, with Falcon and Winter Soldier. I want to call it Captain's America, where they're just both, one of them gets the pants and the shield and the other gets the helmet and the shirt. I don't know.
Oh.
No, I think after like rewatching Civil War, I'm like, do that. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
We're gonna
have stuff that's closer to us than just going to the movies. That's super good Marvel quality, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. It's gonna be fun. I'm excited to see what else they do with Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're bringing over they're not gonna bring over the darker tone of Netflix. Maybe they go to Hulu, but like whatever they're gonna do now that Disney has all these streaming platforms to themselves. We can start playing with that world.
Playing.
And with that, like, talking about a world that we can mm-hmm. play in, I want to transition over to our celebration. And you hear the door clink because we're welcoming in our guests for today. But we want to take the rest of the show to really celebrate the life of Stan Lee. I don't think I have to tell you guys who Stan Lee is, but mm-hmm. he's the architect, one of the architects behind the Marvel universe, like to begin with, like between him, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, like everyone that was at Marvel in the early days, like that's who gave us this world. And we lost him this week, but it's not a sad goodbye. This was, mm-hmm. we're not mourning today. We're celebrating.
Yeah.
We're celebrating this amazing man and everything that he did for our lives. So I wanted to start. So first, welcome Christian and Zia.
Hey, thank you.
Hi, hello, Mary Marvelites. Good to see everyone.
they are our friends from Marvel TV Weekly, and we wanted to have them in to join us in the discussion.
Yes,
and the celebration. Stan Lee, the editor of Marvel, mm-hmm. A controversial figure at times.
Yeah, especially by the people who worked the closest with him.
Yeah.
You know, he and Jack Kirby didn't speak for the last, like, 30 years of Jack Kirby's life. Maybe that's an exaggeration, but definitely the last 20.
It's not that much of an exaggeration.
Yeah, it's probably 20, though, for sure.
But yeah. So he was the face of Marvel. That's the biggest thing. Is that he was not only the editor-in-chief in terms, so that he was in charge of pushing all of these things out. Like, that was his job, was to, like, make sure these things got there. Mm-hmm. So regardless of any of that, we don't get this stuff without a skilled hand driving the train. And he also like he took on the responsibility of being the face of Marvel, which is like its own cool little thing. He was the like imagine being like the first thing kids think of when they think of comic books.
Yeah, I think that's so cool, especially because he gave so much to, and it's so cool that he was willing to kind of take on that responsibility because someone had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, he's like the Hugh Hefner of Marvel. You know, he's really out front.
Before and not just because of Iron Man 1.
Right. Not exactly. Yes. Not just because of the cameo. But yeah, he's just such an important part. And look, just for me personally, my first awareness of Spider-Man was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And every episode started with a narration from Stan. So I always thought of Stan Lee. I didn't know what he looked like until I was a little bit older. But, you know, I was like 5 or 6. And I only ever thought of Stan Lee and Spider-Man at the same time. So I've never known Spidey without Stan. So, yeah, let's not to make you cry, Amy. I know how emotional you can get.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think it's something, too, that even... You know, with kids growing up now that maybe they're not always reading comics or, you know, instead they're watching cartoons or they're going and watching these movies, they know who Stan Lee is. And I think that's so freaking iconic. And that's just representative of everything that he, you know, he was able to, everyone that he was able to affect, really. And I don't know. I think the fact that we're all celebrating being nerds and geeks and everything in this world now, it's like, thank you.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah.
Yeah. The reason that I say, like, for anyone who's not, like, hasn't, like, read, like, The Untold Story of Marvel, which is a phenomenal book. If you enjoy Marvel Comics and you like history, I highly recommend you read that book.
Yeah.
But the Marvel Method was what Stanley came up with, and it was not a traditional way of, like, creating these stories, but it was also how he was able to push out so many books of a certain level of quality. And so the Marvel Method, which like, if you could say that Stan Lee created anything, like you give him the co-creator title of all those characters, Spider-Man, like Doctor Strange, the Incredible Hulk, like those are all shared creations. Mm-hmm. But the Marvel Method, I think, is the thing that you can most attribute, like Stan Lee created that for better or worse. And that method was that he would lay out, like he would have a writing session where he would lay out all the stories. He would say, this is what's going to happen. We're going to do this. And then this happens and this happens. And then he would say, okay, Jack or Steve, go draw it. And they would just draw the story. They would draw the panels without a script. They were creating the story. They were creating the script. So that's why there's a lot of like, well, who really wrote it? It's debatable. Like, mm-hmm. Is it the person who came up with the initial germ of the story? Like, if the story is I go to the store and then I turn to the artist and say, like, well, draw that. And the artist draws in, like, a bunch of different things of what happened when I went to the store. Is one person more of the creator over the other? Or is it just a shared creation? And that's sort of the whole debate about this. It's like, you know, at the end of the day, we got a good story out of it.
Yeah.
Because they would come back with that, and then Stan Lee would fill in the bubbles. He would write the dialogue. The artist might suggest dialogue. Stan Lee would, like, go in and, like, write the dialogue himself. At least that's what is understood of the story.
And you can always tell a story where Stan did the dialogue, especially in the 60s, because it's just this grandiose, just this verbiage that you're like, nobody talks like that, but it sounds so cool. And nobody wrote villains better than Stan. If you know, speaking of Doom himself, if you just read some of the early, you know, soliloquies by Doom, you're like, I don't know, I think he must have lifted that from Shakespeare or something, you know?
Well, that's what comes from, because he wanted to be a novelist. That's fascinating thing when I learned that about Stan Lee was that he didn't want to do comics. Mm-hmm. He was a novelist and he thought comics were beneath him, but he was like, you know what, I'll give this a shot and see what happens. And then he came up with the Fantastic Four and never left.
And also what I think is so cool about it too is that he added so much depth to the characters. He was really kind of the one that wanted them to have, you know, like sort of troubled pasts, and he really gave the characters more than just being crime fighters.
Yes.
Which I thought was really cool.
Well, that's a perfect way to transition to the next thing I wanted to ask all of you guys is, like, what did Stan Lee mean to us? Because I think it's exactly those things. It was exactly, like, those having those characters who had those darker backstories and had troubled lives and had real, like, three-dimensional lives. That is the reason why so many people connected to them and grew off of those characters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Amy, why don't you kick us off? Like, talk about...
Yeah, well, I mean, touching on that, basically having these characters that are not sunshine and rainbows all the time and have had crap happen to them, to have these characters to relate to, and then also having other people, you know, like you guys, like fellow nerds that also relate to them. I think having that community is what Stan Lee really created. Like, he kicked it all off. And for me to, you know, watch Spider-Man when I did, not growing up with comics and still feeling like I'm part of this nerdy world, like, that's what it's all about. That's, you know, not being alone and having someone to talk about Spider-Man with. And, like, if you wear a certain kind of sweater, people are going to be like, oh my gosh, I love your sweater. That kind of camaraderie and family that you can't really find elsewhere. For sure, that's Stan.
Amy's wearing a Ben Reilly sweater.
If you're just listening to this.
NBD. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was... comics was always... these characters are were people that I like... Spider-Man and Captain America were always in my head when I was a kid. I didn't read as many Marvel comics as a kid, but I discovered them as a late teenager and as an adult, and like it. But the characters had always been there. Like, the Hulk at a young age was how I sort of understood my emotions, or at least like brought them to an understanding. Like, the idea that like something like that could be bottled up inside of you, and then you don't want to keep, like, because it can blow up at a certain point. That helped me understand myself in a certain way. I understand the psychology going on in my brain, which is, like, and that's the thing these characters do, is they give you a window to understand yourself. Like, whether it's people struggling with mental illness portrayed as, like, superheroes, or people that are just, like, the good times in their lives and the bad times in their lives. Like, you can make them silly and absurd and, like, have capes, but... they're still real people, and that was what Stan Lee changed about comics, and that was a forever change. It wasn't just, I can fly and stop a bad guy. It was, I have my own stuff going on. I have loss. I'm grieving, but also there's a bad guy with eight arms who's going to kill me.
Well, and the surprising thing is, when you think about Spider-Man, Peter Parker, his backstory is so dark. Because, you know, if you look at it, just say the first 10 years of the character, in his very first appearance in Amazing Fantasy 15, he doesn't stop a burglar. Everybody knows the story because they reboot it all the time. And his luck, that guy breaks into his house and kills his Uncle Ben, you know, his only real father figure. And that's his fault. And then, you know, what, 120 issues later, he tries to save his girlfriend, Gwen Stacy. And in shooting his web, he breaks her neck. So
it's spoilers.
Like, yeah, I know. I think people probably know at this point. You know, and it's just like, well, and somehow he's still the wisecracking crime fighter, you know, amidst all of it. Like, yeah, of course you have times where he gets angry, and there's great dark Spider-Man stories like Kraven's Last Hunt in particular. But you're like, I don't know why he can be so happy, but, you know, good for him, you know. Mm-hmm. And Stan just added that kind of depth to it. And obviously Steve Ditko is such an important part of the look of Spider-Man, especially early on. And, you know, he also would have co-created the Green Goblin. And so, you know, basically your top tier Spidey villains, you know, all came from what Zach was talking about, the Marvel method, that collaboration.
Yeah. Zia.
Definitely a lot of what it meant for me was, especially when I was younger, as being kind of more of an outcast and my nose was always in a book, it was kind of a world for me to escape to. So when the movies first came out, a lot of it you can relate to the characters, and a lot of it is this fantastical world that you can kind of get out of your own reality in your own life and kind of fall into that, and you can relate with the characters. And it was through a lot of the movies and the cartoons that actually got me into reading some of the comics. And I still have so much to read.
Well, it's the same thing for me, though. It was a different cartoon, not anywhere near as good as the cartoons you would have seen as a kid. But Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. But that show had great guest stars. There's episodes with the X-Men. There's an episode with Doctor Strange and Captain America. Yeah. So I was very interested in all these stories. And sort of to what Amy was talking about, I mean, reading comics in the early and mid-80s is a lot different than not just today, but then in the early 90s when it was like a much bigger deal. It was like very mm-hmm. not cool. Mm-hmm. And if you found somebody that also read comics, you were like, well, now we have to be friends. And Stan was our friend too. You know, we all loved the guy who wrote the Stan soapbox in every Marvel comic that came out.
Yeah, they were wonderful. And I also wanted to share, like, for my own thing with with you guys. Anthony, you could throw. No, wait, that you had it there. This was something that my dad sent me to oh. the, like. This was his. We played the Merry Marvel Marching Society tune That's at the great. Top of the episode, and that like from a record that he has when he at 11 years old joined. I think you could send away for like a dollar, and yeah. you joined this club, the Merry Marvel Marching Society. So yeah, there's my signed by Grand Marshal Ben Grimm. you got a little card.
Yeah,
It's something that like there's always that connection. Like it's a cross generational thing. Marvel Comics and like the connections to Stan Lee and everything about these worlds is relatable, whether you're in the 60s, the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, like, and they will, these characters will continue. This world is one that we can continue to live in and be a part of. Whether it connects families. Like that's the thing that I think it is the most powerful, is that it connects people. Like you got like and Christian, like you were saying, like it, you find other friends because like I'm here with you guys because we love Marvel, and that comes from like again, like whether you it was some magic formula that Stan Lee, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, all the people at the Marvel offices, like that they came up with that made this world work. Like, and Stan was a huge part of that. Like, regardless of how all that stuff goes down, all the debates about who created what, and like Stan Lee, we wouldn't have this without Stan.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, right. to the point of the Merry Marvel Marching Society, you know, he just knew how to, you know, he created the idea that there was this bullpen. And so in every issue, there was the bullpen bulletins. They didn't really work in a bullpen. In fact, a lot of the people didn't work in the same office.
Yeah.
But he created this idea of this community, and it seemed so fun. And then whenever there were mistakes, he came up with the great idea of the no prize, where if you found a mistake and you came up with an excuse for, well, it probably meant this, he would send you a no prize, which I think it was an orange envelope, and it said, congratulations, you've won a no prize. And if you open it, it was empty. So, just such a genius thing, you know, who can, amazing. He's not really selling it. You don't pay for it, but who sells empty envelopes better than, Stan Lee? And I think that's probably why he got along so well with the guys from Kiss when they did the Kiss comic book in the 70s.
I mean, that's the thing that's so fun. It's like when you create the interconnected comics that they were trying to do, that the ambition of it, you're going to miss stuff, but yeah. He's like, all right, we create a plot hole, fix it for us. But to that extent, to talking about the bullpen and everything, Anthony, if you want to cue up that that sound cue, I thought this would be a treat. It's from the record that you got when you joined the Merry Marvel Marching Society, so I pulled it from the record. This is just a clip that they played as like one of the things on this beyond just the song. So it's the bullpen talking. That's so great. So hit it.
Okay, out there in Marvel-land, face front, this is Stan Lee speaking. You've probably never heard a record like this before, because no one would be nutty enough to make one with a bunch of offbeat artists, so anything is liable to happen.
Hey, who made you a disc jockey, Lee?
Well, Jolly Jack Kirby, say a few words to the fans, Jackson.
Okay,
and
a
this
few
is,
words.
Like,
look,
this
pal,
is super...
I'll take care of the humor around here.
You've been using the same gags over and over for years.
Well, you can't accuse me of being fickle, can you? By the way, the readers have been complaining about Sue's hairdo again.
What am I supposed to do? Be a hairdresser? Next time I'll draw her bald-headed.
And that's...
Boy, I'm glad we caught you when you were in a good mood.
Jack Kirby talking.
Do you have a few minutes?
For our fabulous gal Friday? Sure. Say hello to the fans, Flo Steinberg.
Hello, fans. It's very nice to meet you. As Marvel's corresponding secretary, I feel as though I know
most
of you from
your letters.
She's my favorite
character on Mad Men.
By the way, Saul Brodsky wants to say a few words.
Saul Brodsky? Who's he?
Stan, the fans know you have a bad memory by all the mistakes you make, but this is ridiculous.
And his ownership
He's been
of
your associate for years.
The, really? The ownership of his mistakes and his failing. Like, talk to you about
that. It's so funny because you put on that record and you think like, wait, do I accidentally have this set at 45? Or is this guy's voice really that high? And that sort of banter is such like a very early 60s thing of like, you know, just, you know, comedy duos and comedy albums and radio that was just, you know, comedy teams like Bob and Ray and stuff. That's what it makes me think of. And it's so funny to hear Jocular Stan and the whole gang. I've never heard that before. So that's the record that your dad has, though.
Yeah,
right?
It's Voices of Marvel. Yeah. It's a hard to track down thing because it was just like sent to the Marvel fans of like the 60s.
Yeah.
Like 60s and 70s, or I think it was the 70s when that thing came out. But Yeah, I thought I would share that with you guys. It's a fun little treat. You can look up longer takes of it online and like listen to more of it. But the other thing I wanted to do as we celebrate Santa, we are the Marvel movie news, of course. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was only appropriate that we take a look at Stan's movie cameos.
Yes.
And I assembled from the four of us our favorites, mm-hmm, between us, like a top 10 list, if you will, in no particular order.
Yeah.
Amy, this one was yours. Kick us off the list with whatever you think of the movie. This is a cute cameo. Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, aww. This. Yeah. 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 This was. When you talk about, you know, what Spider-Man means to each and every one of us, it's like, yes, crap can happen, but you can still make a difference. And Stan, in this part of the movie, he says, like, oh, I guess one person really can make a difference. And just hearing that, like, oh, it just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Like, everything he said, yes. Because especially in a world where, you know, sometimes things can get very negative, when you turn to Spider-Man, you turn to Stan, you're like, yeah, I can make a difference. And it was beautiful. That was one of the highlights. Maybe only highlight of a movie. I'm just kidding.
Sam Raimi actually said that for the first movie, he didn't want to put Stan Lee in it. And
oh, yeah.
Avi Arad had to convince him. Because it had only been in the X-Men movie to that point.
Right.
Like, it was a new thing. But then afterwards, he was glad that he did.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, Stan Lee can't act? What do you mean I have to put him in the movie?
This was so cool.
The next one was one that Christian sent us, which from the Fantastic Four,
yes,
movies. Technically, this is one where he shows up as the same character in two movies, I believe.
Yeah, and yeah, that's the only time that he reprises the character from his cameo. But it's Willie Lumpkin, the mailman, who's a real character in the Fantastic Four. So I just love the idea that he's actually playing this character that you always knew. It was sort of a goofy thing that they had the mailman.
That he had, like, helped create.
Yeah,
like.
And so he got to actually be one of his creations because, look, he's not gonna play Peter Parker. I guess he could have played J. Jonah Jameson, maybe, but I think it was just the perfect fit for him. Give him a little cameo. And, yeah, I really enjoyed, you know, talk about another movie where maybe the highlights are a little harder to find, but Stan as Willie Lumpkin is a great one for me.
Yeah, and then we had from Deadpool when he played the strip,
yes,
club DJ. I think Zia, were you the one that sent this in?
Me.
That,
yeah,
sounds like Zia.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all wonderful. So, yeah, like, you could send it, you could pick any three at random and be like, great.
And I do like, we've already seen that it transcends. It's not like he's not just in the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. And maybe it's because those didn't exist when he started. You know, they're, mm-hmm, in the Fox movies. He's in the Sony movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was surprised that he was in Venom, you know, the most recent one, yeah, that we
he
had.
He popped up on Heroes season one, if you,
oh,
remember.
Oh, I do remember that. That's right.
What?
Yeah.
And he was on an episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
He's
as well.
He's on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They put him into the Netflix series.
Yeah.
Series of photos where he's a cop and then a lawyer.
I just saw an Ultimate Spider-Man episode called A Stand By Me, which is it's pretty much a team up fighting the lizard with Spider-Man and Stan, and he turns out to be an agent at the end of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And at,
yeah,
the end he says, I never did, I'm one of the old school agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But I didn't do it alone. And he says, hey, what's up, Steve? And then there's like a guy off screen that he says hi to, which I thought was pretty cool.
That's cool.
A nice reference, Steve Ditko. That's a great, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, the recent one, was really fun. Phil Coulson is the principal,
yeah,
of Spider-Man school with Stan Lee as the janitor.
Well, and the current Marvel, the Disney XD one that's just called Marvel Spider-Man, Stan was in an episode of that too recently.
Yeah.
And he has a long interaction with Spidey.
Civil War, moving through in our list. Are,
yes,
you Tony Stank?
That was the best.
Yeah. Such a good one. Classic. I needed to throw in the Avengers, the first movie at the end. I, mm-hmm, thought this was perfect because it's so clean and like it doesn't. It's at a point in the movie where you're not like really removed from it. Which is like sometimes the Stanley cameos are a little like take you out of the moment. And they're fun, but they take you out of, like,
yes,
a big scene. But this one is, like, in the perfect spot where it's just, like, superheroes in New York. this one, I know two of you guys sent in from The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the Lizard and Spider-Man are fighting in the school. And Stan Lee, the librarian, is there oblivious.
Oh, so that pretty. Was great. Yeah.
And Stan once talked about how at one point this was his favorite of his cameos. And what he liked is if you watch closely, you can see that I'm keeping time. I don't know if that's true, but I love the fact that he insists that he did. I just thought that was a great one, too, because, again, he's not taking away from the scene. It's actually just really funny while he's there. So I love that one.
Yeah, I think Amy sent this one in from Ant-Man and the Wasp. When his car shrinks, and he goes, well, the 60s were fun, but I'm paying for it now.
That was one that, like, it made me laugh.
Yeah, loud. Nobody thinks about the fact that that guy's car is just gone, like a Hot Wheels toy now. He doesn't have a trigger to grow it back. No. Are they going to go fix it? I doubt it. They got a lot of other stuff going on. He just lost a car. This one is one that I added in and is very recent, not technically a movie, but I thought was so power is so perfect, and it as like one of his what will be one of his last, not his last because there are still some to come, but from the PlayStation 4 game that just came out, Spider-Man.
Wow.
He's in a scene, and it's Mary Jane and Peter Parker, and there's this is a different universe, so it's a very unique take on them, where Mary Jane is an investigative journalist, and it's really still feels absolutely right to the character.
So she's Karen Page.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. I like it. Karen Page.
Right, of course.
Which is not like the 616 Karen Page.
No. She's not a drug addict.
But it's Mary Jane and Peter Parker. And spoilers for the story of the game. I'll just like throw that out there. Miles spoilers. Like, Peter Parker and Mary Jane seem to be getting back together. And Stan's over there like, it's good to see you kids back together. You two always were my favorites. And it's this beautiful fourth wall breaky moment where it totally fits, where like, yeah, this pizza guy that they probably went to regularly, like, is happy to see them. But it's also Stan saying he's glad to see Mary Jane and Peter Parker together again. After, like, they're not together in the comics right now. Or are they?
No, they're back together.
I'm only just getting through the Gage run. But like they haven't been for a while, yeah, and in the movies, like, yeah. Well, we're dealing with that as we go with Homecoming. But I just, it's a really cute, beautiful little moment. This one, Christian, when you and I were working on the Tomorrow Show together with our fearless leader Kevin Undergaro, we had Stan call into the show one day. Here, I'll let you set this one up.
Yeah, and so, I had asked him this question in 2014 on the Dennis Miller Show when he was a guest. I asked him what his favorite cameo was. I thought I'd ask him again in 2016. And so his answer was the scene where he's the veteran, the drinking buddy of Thor. And what he said that it was his favorite is because it's the only one that happens over two scenes. So he's like, it's two scenes. So, and he actually says, like, so let that be some advice to the directors of the future Marvel movies. You know, give me two scenes. But it is a great cameo, in addition to the fact that he liked it.
He's playing one of Captain America's old war veteran buddies. It's wonderful. Yeah. And then the one that I wanted to close on, which I feel is the ultimate Stan Lee cameo from any of these, is from Guardians 2. Where we get confirmation of the absurd fan theory that Stan Lee is Uatu the Watcher, living on the moon, but also coming down to Earth to make sure he's observing all the important events. This was just like, this was so much fun because it was that, like, for years, it was the most fun theory that Stan Lee was Uatu, that he's just like in all these places because he's the Watcher. Seeing, and then you have him standing with a bunch of watchers. It was so, I lost it in the theater with this one. And whether he's not like, he's obviously not in the big capes and like, he's like in a space helmet and everything, but I like to think he's just a transformed watcher.
Yeah, and also, like, with the surprise of that is also because you're like, well, are the Watchers part of the Fantastic Four lore, and does Fox own them? So, you know, that always makes it a surprise when you see a character that you didn't know that they had the rights to. for the MCU.
Maybe it might be one of those things where they have the rights to Uatu, but not the Watchers, since the Watchers, like, that's how it happened a lot with those deals. Like that we don't have to worry about anymore.
Right. It could also be like Quicksilver, where kind of like everybody has a little bit of a claim to
or
it,
like the way I imagine, I think it was similar to how, like, with the Skrulls, both companies could use them, but the Super Skrull was a Fantastic Four specific character. So technically, Disney couldn't use the Super Skrull at the time, but
hopefully
they
do
Skrulls.
Soon.
Like with Captain Marvel coming up. So Watchers, fair play. So in my mind, because the Watchers are each one's from in a different universe, technically, for some reason in this universe, the Watcher looks like Stan Lee. And that's Uatu in this universe. That's our Watcher. But yeah, you guys, whether you're watching this later or listening on podcast form, like, send us your favorite Stan Lee cameos. Like, was it the one in Thor? Or is it, like, did I get it? Which is great. Or any of them. The Incredible Hulk, when he gets radiation poisoning.
Oh, for drinking the soda.
Yeah,
that is a favorite
quick
of mine.
And dumb.
Ooh, yeah.
But there's so many, and they're all wonderful. But let us know what your favorites were, absolutely. And real quick, I want to read through, or Amy, I'll toss to you so I can stop talking for a moment. through some, because we asked you guys at home, the Marvelites, to send us your favorite Stan Lee moments, like whether they were from comics or in real life, and what it meant to you. And so we wanted to make sure that we gave time to shout you out as well.
So, Juha Tuisku at
Nailed
Loth.
It.
Thank you, FL. One of the happiest memories I have of my mother is when she once wanted to surprise me and got me the newest Spider-Man. What makes me happy about that is that out of all the candy and toys they had, she knew to get the comic book, and it was definitely what I wanted the most. It's my Stan Lee memory, because I would not have had that had it not been for him. But really, my Stan Lee moments span from before I could even read to this day, and I'm sure until the day I die, and hopefully even beyond that through my kids one day, which is what we were talking about earlier, you know, that it's just about families and just spreading the nerdiness. Marvel Therapy Group says... Well, Marvel Therapy Group at Therapy Marvel says, being forced away from his autograph table at Rhode Island Comic Con, but still insistently talking to him, I turned around, slammed my hand on the table, and yelled, "Mr. Lee, wait!" The line stops, everyone stares at me, and I quietly say, "Will you say Excelsior with me?" He did. Aww. And Lewis Scott at Lewis1022, Spider-Man, just Spider-Man. I will miss Stan. I also wanted to share one that I don't have a picture here. It's on my Instagram. But I met him at Alamo City Comic Con. And it was one of those things where it's like, holy moly, like, it's a big deal, you know, to go to those Comic Cons and want to see a celebrity, because sometimes it's a lot of money. And but I just knew it was worth it. So just standing in line, seeing everyone come out after taking a picture with him, all of their faces were like, whoa, like, that was Stan Lee. So then as soon as, you know, I walked in there, I was like, wow, that's him. Oh my gosh. And it was just, there was an aura around him. Maybe I went crazy at that time and there was just like music that was just like, ah, there he is. But I didn't even want to touch him. I was just like, you're amazing. But I was just the biggest dork taking a picture with him, but he was so nice and his voice is so recognizable that you're just like, ooh. And it was beautiful. I walked out of there and I was crying. I was like, that happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And John, like, a few other people shared their favorite like panels or issues with us, like John Ashford. The first Marvel comic he bought was Fantastic Four 161. And then he cried twice. And because his comics instilled in me the love of reading. Mm-hmm. What John says. Mm-hmm. Different John Camelot says, I love his contribution to the creation of Super Sentai in the roundabout way that it was. While his attempt to bring it overseas with Sun Vulcan may have failed, knowing that the Power Rangers, what the Power Rangers is today, shows that Stan knew what he was doing. And thanks to Spider-Man! the Japanese, the crazy Japanese takes on Spider-Man with Leopardon.
Yeah.
Look up Leopardon if you're not familiar with it. It's so insane. It's a giant mech that for some reason Spider-Man has in this live action version.
For the only reason that you need, that it's awesome.
And then Daniel Drew. So there's a lot of I've not read or seen of his work, but then there's some I have. A couple of summers I took a superhero course at the Smithsonian, and wow. Stan was in some of the videos talking about comic origins, and I thought it was great that he was a part of this education. Oh, and wow. Stan Lee will continue to be part of like everyone's comic book knowledge. Like he may have left us, he may have left this earth, and that's the other thing that we didn't talk about earlier, but I wanted to say in case people hadn't heard this story. But Roy Thomas, one of Stan Lee's proteges, who took over as editor in chief in later years, said that he was with Stan Lee about 2 days before he passed, or talking to him at least, and that he said Stan was ready to go. His wife passed away about a year and a half ago, and he said, I want to go see Joni. You know, he's old. He accomplished what he was on this earth to do. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the most beautiful thing is that it sounds like Stan, like he did his piece and he was ready for this. Like it wasn't a sudden thing. It wasn't out of nowhere. Like Stan Lee had a phenomenal life. And that's the thing to take away is like, mm-hmm. he had one of the greatest lives that we have. And that's why this is a celebration.
Yeah.
Because it's sad. It's sad that we won't get more of him. We will still get a few more. He's got a voice in Into the Spider-Verse coming up as a cameo. He's going to be in, they've already shot him for Avengers 4. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they shot any for anything past that. Sometimes they have, so maybe he shot some Spider-Man.
It's definitely implied. Spider-Man
2.
Yeah.
I know that they've shot, they do his stuff in batches.
Yeah.
So it's very possible. I'm sure that he's in Captain Marvel. We'll get a few more. Like this isn't the last one, yeah. But it means that there will be a finite amount of Stanley cameos mm-hmm. to come. But he'll be with us because mm-hmm. he spent his time on Earth making us all happier people.
Oh, yeah.
And giving us things to love.
Heck, you know, go to the movies and then you'll see Spider-Man. Go to Netflix and you'll see Daredevil. Yeah, like, all of these characters.
I mean, he even had a cameo in Teen Titans Go to the Movies. He had a cameo in a DC movie. That's how big Stan Lee was.
Bam.
But, yeah. So, Gamer Girl, I turned my window, Gamer Girl, so he's also in Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Oh, great.
I mean, I was already going to see that movie, but of course I'm going to see it. I mean, look, there's Marvel properties in it. You got to put Stan Lee in it. That's uh-huh. the way it works. Yeah. They showed Iron Man flying through one shot, and so Stan Lee was contractually obligated to have a cameo in the movie.
I love that. That's fair.
But any last thoughts on Stan before we wrap out, because we're over time here. Let's start over here with Zia.
Mostly I just think it's awesome that we got what we got, that he, you know, shared everything with the world, and that he did live an awesome life. And I think that even though he's gone, he's going to live on with us forever because of all these characters. And I also had like a thought that I don't know if they'll do this, but for like later cameos, maybe they'll do something like they did with Star Wars, with him as like
A CGI, Grand Moff Tarkin,
like a CGI Stan.
Whew. I'm very curious. Actually, how do you guys feel about that? I personally sort of don't. I'm okay with pictures, mm-hmm. like the Netflix style. I don't really want CG Stan running around.
I can see that. That's where I like, you're not sure how you feel about it.
I like when Star Wars, you've seen like Stan and like graffiti art on the side of a building. I like stuff like that. I think they should always figure out a way to get his image in it.
Yes.
But I kind of hope they don't. Like, that really weirded me out in Rogue One. So I'd rather we just don't see that ever anywhere.
I thought it was cool in Rogue One.
It's well done.
But I think it's good in very specific ways. I thought Grand Moff Tarkin was the right place to use it because it was truly affected the story. You could have easily gotten a different actor to play that part, but it worked. Christian.
My last thoughts, and this is going to be shameless cross promotion, that on Marvel TV Weekly Sunday night over on our sister network AfterBuzz at 10 p.m. Pacific, we're going to spend the whole show talking about Stan and tying into what Amy said about the unmistakable voice of Stan Lee. I will tell the story of the time I answered my phone and on the other end was Stan Lee. And then that ties into the two times I was able to jump in and interview him. But we'll also have some other AfterBuzzers joining us, I think, and talking about Stan. And it'll continue the celebration over there.
Mm-hmm. Amy?
I I just think it's cool that we all get to be nerds and celebrate that. And I think, like I said earlier, the fact that Stan was able to do that for us and really let us embrace our, you know, freak flags. Like, we can love do it. It, and it's cool. So,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, for me, like, this week, I was already doing this, and just because I was taking over, I was posting my top 9 Marvel characters of all time, because, like, mm-hmm. when we announced that I was coming back to today, that was a nostalgia trip for me before this news broke, and then, so it was like, you'll find that all on my Twitter, but I didn't put my number one up, which is, of course, Peter Parker.
Yes!
Spider-Man is my number one favorite. Like, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp are there, absolutely. Technically, there's 2 Ant-Man there. The Hulk, like, just tons of people. But Spider-Man is such a good expression of, like, who we can all be and, like, what it means to let yourself out and embrace who you are. Even if there's 2 different sides to you, that's totally understandable and acceptable. And that's just... But live it that way, even if it's hard. Like, that's what Stan's stuff meant to me. Mm-hmm. And... the fact that I get to come back here every week and talk to you guys about Marvel, and I don't have to have a Doom mask on my head anymore.
Well, only every other time. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, no. but with that, thank you guys so much for joining us this week for our Stanley celebration. Thank you, Christian and Zia, for joining us. Thank you, Amy.
Of course. So
excited that we're going to be here every week talking Marvel from here on out.
Yeah.
Every Thursday at 1, guys, Marvel Movie News will be back to bring you the latest hits, news, reviews, everything about Marvel. I'm Zach Wilson, the voice, a.k.a. the voice of Doom. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ThatZachWilson, ThatZachWilson. Check out our sister network, AfterBuzz TV, where I host the Doctor Who After Show. I also have a podcast of my own called Ships in the Night, which is a very weird shipping podcast where we just take different characters from different universes and ship them together. It gets weird, but check it out if you're into that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Amy. Where can everyone find you?
You guys can find me on all social media at Amy Cassandra MTZ. I do a couple shows here on Box Office. Nope. On Popcorn Talk. One of them is Box Office Breakdown. And then I also do a couple on AfterBuzz. So just follow me and you can find all that stuff there.
And Christian?
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. And I did mention Marvel TV Weekly Sundays at 10. But look for the archive of the Daredevil Season 3 After Show, which I did with Zia and Zach.
That's true. You can do that.
And she is on Marvel TV Weekly with me.
I am. And I'm also on Doctor Who with Zach as well.
Everybody. It's
we all know
synergy.
Each other.
We're all big family. Community, but Zia, guys, where can everyone find you on Twitter and Instagram and all that?
Twitter and Instagram at Zia_Land. It's XIA_Land. And yeah.
All right, guys.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
Merry Marvelites, I say to you, Excelsior.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.